Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 5, Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness, text number 29. Bhoktaram Yagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Suridam Sarabhutanam Gyatva mam shantim richati. Bhoktaram, the beneficiary, yagya, of sacrifices, tapasam, and penances and austerities, sarvaloka, of all planets, and the demigods thereof. Mahaishwaram, the Supreme Lord. Suridam, the benefactor. Sarva, of all. Bhutanam, the living entities. Yatva, thus knowing. Mam, me. Lord Krishna, shantim, relief from material pangs, richati, one achieves. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Person of full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. Purport. The conditioned souls within the clutches of illusory energy are all anxious to attain peace in the material world. But they do not know the formula for peace, which is explained in this part of the Bhagavad Gita. The greatest peace formula is simply this. Lord Krishna is the beneficiary in all human activities. Men should offer everything to the transcendental service of the Lord, because He is the proprietor of all planets and the demigods thereon. No one is greater than He. He is greater than the greatest of the demigods, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. In the Vedas, Shveta Svatara Upanishad 6-7, the Supreme Lord is described as Tam Ishvaranam Paramam Maheshwaram. Under the spell of illusion, living entities are trying to be the lords of all they survey. But actually, they are dominated by the material energy of the Lord. The Lord is the master of material nature, and the conditioned souls are under the stringent rules of material nature. And thus one understands these bare facts, it is not possible to achieve peace in the world, either individually or collectively. This is the sense of Krishna consciousness. Lord Krishna is the supreme predominator, and all living entities, including the great demigods, are His subordinates. One can attain perfect peace only in complete Krishna consciousness. This fifth chapter is a practical explanation of Krishna consciousness, generally known as Karma Yoga. The question of mental speculation as to how karma yoga can give liberation is answered herewith. To work in Krishna consciousness is to work with the complete knowledge of the Lord as the predominator. Such work is not different from transcendental knowledge. Direct Krishna consciousness is bhakti yoga, and jnana yoga is the path leading to bhakti yoga. Krishna consciousness means to work in full knowledge of one's relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Absolute. And the perfection of this consciousness is full knowledge of Krishna, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A pure soul is the eternal servant of God as his fragmental part and parcel. He comes into contact with Maya, illusion, due to the desire to lord it over Maya. And that is the cause of his many sufferings. As long as he is in contact with matter, he has to execute work in terms of material necessities. Krishna consciousness, however, brings one into spiritual life even while one is within the jurisdiction of matter. For it is an arousing of spiritual existence by practice in the material world. The more one is advanced, the more he is freed from the clutches of matter. The Lord is not partial toward anyone. Everything depends on one's practical performance of duties in Krishna consciousness, which helps one control the senses in every respect, conquer the influence of desire and anger. And one who stands fast in Krishna consciousness, controlling the above-mentioned passions, remains factually in the transcendental stage, or Brahma Nirvana. The Eightfold Yoga mysticism is automatically practiced in Krishna consciousness because the ultimate purpose is served. There is a gradual process of elevation in the practice of Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi. But these only preface perfection by devotional service, which alone can award peace to the human being, is the highest perfection of life. Poktaram Jagatapasam Sarvalokamaheshwaram Suridam Sarvabhutanam Gyatpamam Shantim Richati. Person of full consciousness in me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living being entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. The second chapter we were told, Nashti buddhiya yuktasya nacha yuktasya bhavanaha nacha bhavintak shantir ashantasya kutak sukham. That one who's not in divine consciousness or Krishna consciousness, what is the exact translation here? One is not connected with the Supreme in Krishna consciousness can have neither transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there's no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? In other words, one cannot be happy as long as he's identified. One cannot be peaceful if one doesn't realize that one is eternal. If we don't realize we're eternal, then we must think we're temporary. And if we're temporary, then we're in anxiety. When is my existence going to end? Because no one wants to just disappear. Anyone here just wants to disappear? Since we're eternal, we want to exist eternally. It's normal. Unfortunately, when one identifies oneself with the body, then there's no question of existing, the body existing eternally, because the body is always changing. But if one wants to serve, one becomes attracted to material sense gratification and mental speculation, then by the workings of material nature, one is forced to identify oneself with the gross and subtle material body. In what state, one will be in anxiety over the demise of the body, that all the work we're doing, either on the subtle platform or on the more gross platform, will all be lost at the time of our leaving this body. Whatever ideas we had, whatever we thought we accomplished, whatever books we wrote, whatever we did, it's all zero at the time of leaving this body. Everyone will be in anxiety. I'm working so hard for nothing. But if one is factually in Krishna consciousness, one is actually conscious of Krishna, then whatever one is able to accomplish in relationship to Krishna, increasing one's relationship with Krishna, the loving relationship to Krishna, that's permanent. But in order to do that, we have to increase our relationship with Krishna. We have to understand those three things, that Krishna is the controller, Krishna is the enjoyer, and Krishna is the friend of everyone. If we think Krishna is not the controller, then I have to control, or my friend has to control. And if Krishna is not the enjoyer, then I'm going to enjoy. If the Prabhupada gives the example, if the different parts of the body believe that they're the enjoyer, the hand believes that it's the enjoyer, then it tries to mush the food together, squeeze it together, trying to get some enjoyment from it. But if it actually wants enjoyment, it has to give the food to the stomach, and then naturally then the hands and legs and everything else will enjoy. And if one thinks one is the benefactor, then one will think that one is the body, or that the ideas that we have come from us, rather than Krishna supplying the remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Rather than being an instrument for Krishna, we think that we're the originator, and that by our original contribution, whatever contribution we're making, that we're the ones who are enlightening and saving everyone, rather than Krishna is enlightening everyone and saving us also. Therefore, one has to hear how Krishna is controlling, for instance. In the first two cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam, specifically it talks about how Krishna is controlling everything. A summary is given there in the Bhagavad Gita. Dhyayato vishyam pumsam sangaste shupajayate sangat sanjayate kama kama krodo vijayate krodo bhavati samoha samoha smriti vibramsat smriti vibramsat budinasho budinashat pranashati. How we're controlled by material nature. That when we're not engaged in Krishna consciousness, when we're being idle, then we look around us for something to do. Something that will attract us. Like it says that in the beginning of the creation, Brahma created man. But man had nothing to do. So then he created woman, and then he was fully engaged. So we're not engaged, we'll have to look for something to do. And whatever attracts the senses, then Maya supplies the inspiration in the form of lust. If people cannot feel lust when they look at an object, they feel quite disappointed. People live in order to feel lusty. They call that love. Become lusty to something to eat, become lusty to get the new car, the new computer, the new wife, the new husband, lusty to become famous, lust, something we need. And lust drives us to act in order to accomplish what we want to accomplish, or to get what we want to get. And if we get what we want, then we want more of it. More and more and more. So we become greedy. And of course, no one can get everything they want. There's always a limit. And therefore, one becomes frustrated and angry when one can't get something. The fox jumping for the grapes, jumping, 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 can't get them. Oh, they're sour. It's not even worthwhile getting them. Frustration, anger. I want this, I want that. I want more and more. And finally, something happens. We can't get it. We run out of money. We run out of time. We run out of this body. And then, in the midst of that, as we're cultivating lust, greed, and anger, material energy is just filling our consciousness with so many conceptions and ideas. Who we are, where we are, what we're doing, why we're in this place, why things are happening. We become in a fairy tale, which material nature creates for us, of all kinds of ideas and conceptions, generally where we're either in the center of existence or we're trying to have other people put us in the center of existence. If no one else loves me, no one else puts me in the center, then I get a dog, and the dog relies on me. The dog comes and greets me, and licks its face, my face. Oh, I love you. Actually, the dog would love to eat us, but but because something has to love us. And if we can't get a dog, we don't want to take care of a dog, then we get a goldfish. We imagine the goldfish is thinking about us. Somehow or another, someone has to put us into the center of attention. In my delusion, I want to be the center of attention. And then I forget what's actually going on, what reality is, that I'm going to die, that this body is growing old, and that I've tried in so many different ways, kamarinam, katida, katida, palitas, dornidesh. In so many different ways, I've tried to satisfy my material desires. But they were never merciful to me. They never said, oh, my dear soul, you've been working so hard for me 24 hours a day, and you deserve a vacation. Maybe you can take a couple of days off from serving lust, anger, and greed. Now they say, you rascal, look at everyone else. They're serving their senses much better than you are. Why don't you do something? Get a life. Work harder. You're only gratifying your senses 24 hours a day. You should try to do it 25. Then you'll be a good person. They're never merciful, nor whatever I did, was I ever thinking that I was doing something wrong. Kamarinam katida katidas palitas dorni deshas teshama yijata na karuna na shanti no prasanti na trapa no prasanti. I always made an excuse. Whatever happened, I was a good person. It was the other people that were the problem. And anyone who dare criticizes me, then they're committing a great maha aparad, and their destiny will be unknown. So there was no limit to the desires. There was no succession to the desires, nor was I ever embarrassed by any desire. I always could figure out how I was doing the right thing. So therefore, love of Buddhists, one has to get intelligence that actually, if we please Krishna, if we serve Krishna, if we recognize him as the controller, as the proprietor, and utilize his energies in his service, and become conscious of him, then we'll actually find out that we can even control Krishna with our loving service. That we'll actually enjoy unlimitedly in Krishna consciousness. And then we'll actually become our own friend. We can act as everyone else's real friend. Otherwise, we're simply going to waste our time. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Comments?
Hare Krishna. The promise of this world is seems to be universally attractive, peace. But the very first line will make most people nowadays stumble because in the modern language, neither sacrifice nor tapasya is something people understand. Nor beneficiary. So all three words are frankly not so clear.
Well, everyone is sacrificing. People get up in the morning, they used to get up in the morning, go to work. But everything we're doing is sacrificing. The question is, what will be the result of the sacrifice? Either we can sacrifice in goodness or in passion or ignorance. Look at Hiranyakashipu. He sacrificed his existence to become immortal. Sacrifices his normal life to try to go through some austerity. Everyone's going through austerity. Getting up in the morning is not austere. Most people, it's quite an austerity. But they do it, and they sacrifice for their family. They go through austerity, and they sacrifice. So they're hoping that they're actually going to become recognized as a beneficiary. They're going to get some benefit from it. They're going to get everyone's love and sacrifice and exchange. So these are eternal principles. Everyone is going through some austerity. If you don't voluntarily go through austerity, you want to eat too much or have too much sex or whatever, you're going to have to suffer and go through some austerity to make up for it. If you think I'm not going to sacrifice, well, in order to get food, you're going to have to sacrifice. To have a place to sleep, you're going to have to sacrifice. Everyone's engaged in sacrifice. And everyone's relying upon others. Everyone has to please others, benefits others in some way. Otherwise, one will not be able to get in return what one actually needs. Anything else? Yes. Okay, give it to her.
I would like to ask what is the reason that we are so quickly offended?
Are you quickly offended?
For myself or maybe for a friend, yeah. Okay. Sometimes I am.
I won't offend you then. No, generally because we're impatient. We're expecting something, and we get the opposite of what we expect. We want people to appreciate us and love us and do whatever else. And when they don't do that, we become very frustrated and angry because of our false ego. We're deeply in love with our material body, with our material feelings, with our material conceptions, because we think that this is my object of love. Just like I've said many times, we get up in the morning, we look in the mirror, and we ask the mirror, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the greatest of them all? And immediately the mirror answers, my dearest soul, after so many births and deaths, you finally have darshan of the Supreme in the mirror. So please, render unalloyed, uninterrupted service to this beautiful thing you're seeing in the mirror, this deity. So then we become determined. We make a vow, today I'm going to engage in unalloyed, uninterrupted service. And whatever, spontaneously I'm going to serve whatever desires my mind and my senses have. So then if we're a little pious, we take a shower, and we call that Abhishek. We bathe the deity. We dress the deity. We clothe the deity. We make the deity very beautiful as it can. Then we feed the deity 5 kinds of foodstuffs. And then we go out into the world to spread the glories of the deity everywhere. And we call that Sankirtan. So we're in love with this deity we're in. And if anyone there is offended, we're supposed to get angry. Because it's a maha apara. It says in scripture, you should get angry when the deity is offended. So it's due to our false ego. Anything else? Yes.
Ah, Krishna. My question is not so useful, probably, but it came up somehow. This fear of non-existence, one could claim some claim that actually it's more pertains to something else, or one could claim that it could be fear of witnessing, of fear of eternity, fear of witnessing losing everything. What is exactly fear? If you can compare those two fears, which somehow collide, fear of non-existence and fear of...
Well, there are 3 major anarthas. One of them is fear of the conception of materialism, that there's nothing beyond matter. The second is the fear of a personal spiritual identity, And the third is the frustration that arises from the conception of void. So, vita raga vaya krodha manmaya mamupashitya bahava gana tapasa puta madbhava agata. Being free from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, thus they all attained transcendental love for me. So, there's different types of frustration and any kind of attachment ultimately leads to fear. One is attached to materialism, and one is attached to voidism, one is attached to impersonalism, then they're all fearful stages of existence, devoid of personal spiritual identity. But the most frustrating one is the fear of void, that I'm going to disappear, that everything is meaningless. At least when one is a staunch materialist, at least one is trying to enjoy when he's in the material energy. And when one is impersonalist, the idea of enjoying becoming God is there. But the voidist is the most fearful stage. Therefore, anyhow, maybe it has something to do with the benedictions. But there was no benediction. May you never disappear. The king asked the minister, the minister was asking why some blessings were being given, and the king was asking why are these blessings being given. So to the prince, the saintly person gave the blessing, may you live forever. And for the killer of animals, he said, may you neither live nor die. And for the brahmachari, he gave the benediction, may you die immediately. He was wondering, so the king asked the minister, well, why is he giving these benedictions? He said, well, the prince, he's enjoying like anything, his senses. But because he's doing sinful activities, when he dies, he's going to go to hell. So may he live forever. And as far as the brahmachari, he's going through so many austerities, suffering so much to go to Vaikuntha. So if he dies immediately, he'll go there. So let him die immediately and he doesn't have to suffer anymore through all these austerities. And for the killer of animals, the butcher, that he's living in a hellish state right now, killing animals, hearing their scream and covered with blood. So he shouldn't live. But if he dies, he's going to hell. So he shouldn't die. So he should neither live nor die. So that's all, actually they're all fearful stages of existence. Of course, coming to Vaikuntha is not fearful, but for the materialist, everything is fearful. Otherwise, why did I have to take so much intoxication in order to forget? Anything else? Khwala. Gandharaj Bhagavad Gita Kijaj.